All right, okay. Here we are again. Going into the final stretch. And it's after lunch as well. So it's going to be tempting because it's warmer today. A few of you drifted off yesterday. It's going to be tempting for the rest of you today to join them. Even. All right. You're coming along. How are you feeling? Are you feeling more lively, more light? There's a buoyancy in this space, part of which may be attracting orbs, you think? All right. Any space that you are in which you're acknowledging and recognizing the divine within you, automatically, instantly becomes sacred space. Anytime you acknowledge the divine in any form or shape or substance, it becomes sacred. The sacredness is the recognition of the precious beauty of the divine that filters through every form, just as you may have a whole bunch of water pots sitting around filled with water. The sun comes and shines. Each one of them has its own sun reflection in it. Each one of you are reflecting the divine. And everyone that you see reflecting the divine. We've talked a lot today about integrating the spiritual and the material. And your evolutional path is to do that in the greatest consciousness and joy possible. As we emphasized, very important to keep focused on who you are, on the divine that you are, the divine being of light. Because if you can keep that orientation and then connect with your physical material plane in that state of love and freedom and power and safety, you can bring into being manifestations of beautiful dreams, your dreams. Not the young adult's dreams, right? Young adult's dreams have a huge fantasy scope. And while you want to have and desire to have, sometimes in your greatest imagination, tremendous impact upon the world, in some kind of obvious form, the truth of it is that the impact that you're making on the world is total and complete from here where you are. It doesn't even require any external activities. So keeping an eye on that young adult, which can run amok in fantasy, you can stay clear. You can be clean in your energy. Clean with your ego as that channel, as that conduit to bring stuff back to you. Feeling free, feeling joyous, having fun. In your laboratory, in your experimental laboratory, a physical plane experience, the physical plane senses. While so many rail against the lure and the trap of the senses. That's what you have to work with in your physical plane. And because there has been so much judgment about it, particularly and from India, don't give in to the senses. You must lift above the senses. And so, of course, that supports a whole subculture of people who leave the world and go off and go wandering around in ethereal spaces, They don't realize the senses are there too. The senses are everywhere as long as you're in a physical body. Everything you perceive must filter through your senses. If you do not trust yourself, you will probably also not trust your senses. You'll put a spin on everything that comes to you. You'll interpret it and slide back into ego, negative ego. So what's the secret? What's the keys to staying plugged in to the physical plane? To being able to be present with it. To be able to be spiritual, not feel brought down somehow or lowered in some way by the physical plane. Yeah, there are certain things in the physical plane that you don't really like to do. Most people who have a business of their own don't like to do the paperwork. They don't like to do what is disparagingly called the grunt work. They don't like to do the marketing and sales work. And picking up the phone and trying to get people to come in to a session or buy their product. They don't often like to fill out taxes and keep records of everything. But this is something that your culture demands. Your culture demands record keeping. It demands, in a sense, that you have to convince other people of your value or the value of your product. It's all set up, in a sense, to discourage you from being self-determined, not to follow the establishment order. And what's funny is that it's part of the process is that an upstart can start a company and be wildly successful, and pretty soon that company will get codified and just as structured and organized as any other. So the freshness, the creativity, is with the dreaming, the imagining, and the initial putting everything into form, i.e. manifestation. Most people seem to have a rough time with that. Beyond a certain level, beyond that momentum bottom line, financial bottom line, sometimes it's difficult just to raise that up, to have such magic and synchronicity come in that you can win the lottery or win the lottery in another way, like with your business. All of a sudden it catches fire and everybody wants your product. Lots of companies fall apart if they grow too fast. It's a real serious challenge. So how do you sustain that energy correctly so that you can move from vision and dream into manifested reality without it collapsing anywhere along the line? So you have to start a bit earlier with a decision about what you're doing. That doing must emerge from being. And the being must be connected to the future. It must be connected to the future being. You don't connect the current being to future doing. The circuit doesn't connect all the way through. You have to connect the present being to the future being, i.e. your future self. And a lot of times when people work with their future self and go into meditation with their future self, what they get from their future self is a lot of excitement and they feel all high and it's fantastic. But there are certain key things you need to get from your higher self and from your future self and from your spirit helpers so that you can stay in alignment materially speaking. And that is also the forces of nature, the earth, the mother earth, and the earth spirit, the gnome. Gnomes live in little houses in the earth. Sometimes if you get into a semi-altered state, you can actually see them. And they will do all sorts of interesting things. They will work mechanics. One time the channel, when she was quite young, saw one. And it took her a while to realize that she was watching a gnome. A gnome was repairing, had opened a little door on a street light. Okay? One of these big electrical street lights, right? And there's a little door, and the gnome was about a foot and a half tall, maybe 2 feet tall, tops. It opened a little door. I was in there working stuff. Looked up and saw her, closed the door, and walked away. And then she blinked, goes, "What did I just see?" "I saw a little being. I saw a little man. It looked just like one of those, what, Keebler elves, you know?" Little hat, you know? Wearing red, you know, red knickers or whatever. That's, golly, I just saw one. What was that? They're wonderful, these gnomes. They'll help you on your computer if you like. Who likes to have computer glitches, right? If you have a computer glitch, it's the perfect opportunity to call in a gnome to help you. Befriend the gnomes. They will make sure that the mechanics of physical plane manifestation can work well for you. They support the positive ego. Right? So first of all, as we did last night, we took away all the judgments that you have about physical plane existence, all the judgments that you have about the nature of business, the nature of the way the world worked. Because, yes, it doesn't work in the way that you would, by your nature, probably set it up. Every individual has their sense of order, and then there is the collective order. We worked with you so that you could release your rebellion against the consensus, allowing, therefore, the consensus to support you. But staying connected with the material plane, even once you're at more at peace and at home in your body, and being with your body and being more present and staying connected, those old habits die kind of hard. A tendency to scatter and wander off into the stratosphere. That those philosophical thoughts are up here somewhere above your head, and the world is down here where your hands are. You know, if you see the drawings of small children, you'll notice there's a gap between the ground and the sky. It's one of the experiences that, you know, in art that every child goes through at some age, you know, maybe 2 or 3. Draw a house. And there they draw the little house, and here's the ground. And then up here is this band of blue at the top, right? You probably did that when you were a kid. What's going on between the ground here, the green, and the blue up there? There's nothing. This is the disconnect between spirit and earth that's in your DNA. That's why children have to learn to perceive, oh, the sky comes all the way down to the earth. Wow, what a concept. So what we like to do, we call our work, is bringing heaven to earth, bringing the sky down to earth so they connect. And then it looks real. Then your illusion looks real, feels real for you. We've talked about getting healed of those voices in your head, the naysayers, that maintain a lot of this separation. We've also talked about the ego. We've talked about all sorts of things this weekend. Resistances, etc. that keep you from that manifestation, keep you from that connection with the flow of your divine energy moving into the world, touching the world, and the world responding to you. Most people have difficulty about the world responding to you. If you have shame, you're afraid of the world's response to you. You're afraid that the world is going to respond to you in such a way to judge you, to shame you, to humiliate you. And you don't really want to risk it. Or you're afraid that when the world responds to you, you're going to be overwhelmed. So your resistances come tremendously up to the surface when you look at receiving, which we've also talked about some before too. Receiving. Receiving is a gift from Mother Earth to you in form. Every form that you bring to yourself or attract to yourself, every manifestation is a symbol of energy, of a certain type of energy. That energy, which is the energy of that is underlies manifestation, is your intention and your capacity to receive. You have to put that together into an integrated form or an integrated frequency, so that your ego can then, their positive ego, can then create out of that the channel, the avenue, the link through which things can come. If you don't have one of your pieces available to you, like receiving, for example, or your intention is marred by agendas and comparisons, the channel is going to get twisted, distorted, and things can't make it all the way through. They'll come close, and you'll be reaching for the golden carrot, and it'll be snatched away from you. A lot of people can put together wonderful manifestations up to a point, and then it gets really hard. And most of you then say, oh, it's getting harder. We have to push through. Maybe if we rush it, maybe we do it really fast, we can get over to the other side before it falls apart. And the slave driver says, you called? So it's important for you to realize that this planet set up for you, all this illusion set up for you, has an incredible abundance. It is a creative planet with every possibility for you. There is no scarcity on this planet, regardless of what people say. And if enough people say it, then everybody starts to believe it. That's the consensus, gossip, right? Oh, we're having an economic downturn. This means you're going to have less money. Sorry, you're going to be poorer. The next generation of children are going to be poorer than their parents. Yeah, let's project it out, you know, several decades. That sounds like fun, right? And all the pundits come out with all their poo-pooing and their negativity and their naysaying. Guess what? These guys are just reflections of your inner mind talk. It's not real. But if you buy into it, you buy into that energy, you cancel out your manifestation, and then you mark it up to, well, the economy's down. People are just poorer now than they used to be. I just can't seem to find any clients with money now. It's the way it is all the way around the world, all the planet. You know, it's just really bad. And then you've justified it, reinforced it. What are you going to do for the future now? Look how much work you're going to have to go through now to overturn that belief. So, in order for you to manifest, you have to have a clean intention. It means that your ego is clear. You don't have any charge you issue on it. That you're manifesting because you're enjoying the creative act of it. It's something that is an experience for you. It's part of your divine play. And in the process of that, it will also bring you money, or maybe fame, or whatever you feel that would be valuable for you to forward your financial interests. If your manifestation is for a love relationship, same thing applies. You must be free of charge. In other words, any relationship that you've had in the past must be clean. It must be cleaned out, cleared, done. If you want to call in a manifestation. If your manifested desire is for healing of your physical body, greater strength or greater vitality, then your sob story of your past around your body and the projection of that into your future must end. It's all about vibration, dear ones. Your intention must be clean. Vibrations must be clean. And you must look at the form as representing a reflection of who you are. Not that it will ever come close to reflecting your glory or light. But the universe be like a mirror and bring it back to you. This is how you reveal yourself. And if you have fear of failure, you also have fear of growing. You have fear of knowing yourself. Because if a failure comes to you, the opportunity is to teach you tremendous amounts of things about yourself and what you're feeling, what you're thinking, what you believe, who you perceive yourself to be, what your story is, all that kind of thing. We talked about that in the previous section. And with that intention, clean, you add to it your creative passion, your imagination. With that, as you imagine it, you're imagining the vibrations of it, the energies of it, the magic of it. You don't imagine the form as much as you imagine the life. Imagine the thrill, what it's going to feel like, be like. And then this form seems to be my favorite of all the potential forms that could manifest this particular life. And so you put that form on it. It gives your reality, it's a directive to your reality that that's the area you want the manifestation to occur. You give them an idea of the form. And they'll bring it back to you precisely aligned to you, just as you have a body that's unique because it's precisely aligned to your vibrations. No other person has a body like yours. When you said, I want a body, you called for a body that was right for you, to reflect you. When you want a manifestation, you say, okay, I want a body, i.e. a form, and then that manifestation will come back just right for you. You want to call on help. You want to touch your future self. And you call upon the gnomes, the forces of nature, to give you the vibrational energy, the light, the force, the expanse, the power, the ramp up vibration that you would get if you were the darling of the consensus. Since you're not the darling of the consensus, you want the consensus to be your darling. You want to treasure the consensus, and you want to create a sense of positive consensus. You line all this up together, and then flow your divine energy, your divine flow through it into the world with love, loving, touching, and healing. Well, voila, it's going to connect. It's going to stay connected. Now, all of this sounds like, oh, this is a process. You know, I got to remember this and I got to remember that. And da, 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 da. But you see, if you will take it apart and for the fun of it, like a creative project, you take each piece and you spend a few days just paying attention to that one piece. Let me pay attention to my intentions. How I intend things. How I determine what I want and why. Let me pay attention to that for a few days and just see what that teaches me. What that I can see revealed in there that I may want to change, shift, or amplify. And then some other day, to go and contact your future self, wherever they are, in whatever digs they live, and just go hang out with them and imbue their sense of self. And hang out for a few minutes and just feel their sense of success. Feel their love, power, freedom, and safety, trust. Feel their greater capacity to love, touch, heal, to create with passion, to acknowledge the greatness of their spirit, soul, their divine. And get a good hit. And then come back to your daily life and say, okay, I'm going to remember this as frequently as I can during the day. In some of the Eastern traditions, particularly one that the channel was in for a while, there's a term called Simran. It's a repetition of a mantra. Most of you have heard the Om Mani Padme Om. It doesn't really mean anything. It's like the jewel in the lotus or something like that. It has a reference to the chakra, to the 1,000-petal chakra of the crown. But it can be applied to any chakra. All it has been used is as a point of focus that has a very, very high vibration. But if you remember it and you say it all day, you know, Catholics can have their rosary beads, right? And they can just feel the rosary beads. You've probably seen Hare Krishna people with their beads, you know, rubbing in their beads. It's remembrance. It's a remembrance of the divine. Whatever method you need to remember the divine, and especially the divine within you, play with it. Find out what works for you so that you can live your day being a divine being from that perspective. What is that like? Because once you kind of get that, you're going to start seeing how manifestation and physical plane reality and all that goes on the world and the planet in reference to you is going to be intriguing, fun, uplifting, warm. Then maybe spend a few days observing ego. Where do I compare? Where is my negative or dark side of the ego, the twisted part? Why do I want things? You asked already before, could be also ego. But overall, what is it that you compare? How do you find a reference point for yourself, for your success and happiness? What's that reference point? For a lot of people, it's externally based. It can be what the culture says is popular and important and good. It can be what the top of your pecking order says. It can be the hottest new technology gadget. It can be actually your mate or significant other of any kind, child, friend, peer, partner, that you orient around this, around this person, to find out where you stand with yourself. Who are you in reference to that? That gives you a clue about yourself. When you spend time coming from the spiritually empowered adult, the divine self, your reference point is you. It has nothing to do with anything out there. It has nothing to do with who your mate is, how high or low or positive or negative they are. It has nothing to do with how much money you make or what anybody thinks of you. It has nothing to do with whether you're healthy or ill, even terminal. It has nothing to do with that. It has nothing to do with form, but everything to do with the light of yourself. Some people have discovered who they were only on their deathbed. We do not recommend that. It's a bit drastic growth process. But sometimes when you're around people who are dying, you see people that are the most radiant, extraordinary beings. Their soul shines through them. It's an amazing thing. And then you think, oh, how sad they have to go. This, look how incredible they are. The world needs to know about this wonderful, amazing person. Well, the thing is that you're like that all the time if you will just allow it to emerge, to be part of your radiance. When you're the reference point for you, then you see more fun in taking light and sending it out there than you do in wondering when are you going to get some. And if your reference point is you, you won't get depleted no matter how much you give until and unless that giving turns into an agenda. If you have an agenda other than love, touch, heal, like an agenda like, I'm going to give this to them and then they'll like me, or I'll do this for them because I think they're really worthy and I'll be close to them. You know, that doesn't work. There's you want something back. It's not flowing freely. And you probably, if you want something back, you're also anxious you may not get it. So you may have a resistance. Bang, right away. Which brings us to the next one. You may want to spend a few days just looking at your resistances. How do I resist? What do I resist? Do I resist feeling safe? Do I resist receiving stuff? Do I resist being with people? Do I resist being out in my world? Do I resist working? Do I resist playing? What do I resist? What do you rationalize? What do you discount? What part of yourself, what place within you are you afraid to go, so much so that you'll go into resistance to spending time being with you and keep running around being with other people and whatever? Play with these things. They're extraordinary, enlightening experiences that can come out of this. And all of it amounts to your relationship. Yes, your relationship with this other, this significant other called your reality, your world. Anything that keeps you from allowing it to be safe, loving and supportive of you. Like earlier, the panic of the child in shame. Every one of you has a child panicky at some point. Every one of you has a child adolescent in shame somewhere. So look, watch, pay attention. Don't be in, also watch to see how your awareness is, or are you in vigilance? What do you think about negativity? Do you feel vulnerable? You know, what are your fears of being visible? What's the worst that could happen if you were visible? And if people could see you. You can also, just for the fun of it, actually this can be really quite fun, just observing it, when you're not under challenge about this particular thing, it's a heck of a lot of fun. When you're under challenge, you need to focus and get aligned and do some work. But if the focus isn't there, you can play with it and just to get to know yourself better. You know, in the first phase of a love relationship, of a romance, you want to know everything about this lover. Oh, it's just so wonderful. You want to just know this, want to know that. You end up, you know, wanting to know their whole childhood or whatever. You know, it's just, sometimes it can get almost absurd. But if you could turn that love, that romance to yourself, you know yourself really well. You've done a lot of work, all of you. But your work is not complete quite yet, because your self-talk still has glitches, still has twists. But it's fascinating if you use it as an experiment, use it as a fun process, out of curiosity, and engage yourself in it. It becomes quite interesting. It becomes kind of fun because you're not taking it personally. You're not interpreting everything that comes to you that may have a little slant to it or a twist to it as indicative of something you've done wrong or something bad about you or somebody not liking you or blah, 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 or any of that kind of stupid stuff. You'll start to see how you think and how you work your thoughts, how you move your divine flow through your life, how you approach freedom, power, safety, and trust, how you approach love, touch, heal, how you approach creation, divine ecstasy, and passion, how you approach your learning and growing process. It's absorbing. It's absolutely fascinating. And every little piece that you learn gets integrated into your whole, opens up and attracts your talents, your gifts, these pieces of light, these globules of light. And you become more. And your gifts open up. Your awarenesses open up incredibly well. Because there's no judgment. It's free. You're having fun. It all can just plop right in and be, boom, put into the flow and, in a sense, ready to go. And magic synchronicities will pop up everywhere. And you can play with them. You can choose what you want of them. But connecting to reality, your relationship with your reality is critically important. Your relationship with yourself is critically important. Relationship is where you make the connection. So what we're going to do is at the end, we're going to do another meditation where we're going to evoke the forces of nature. We're going to call in the gnomes. We're going to align your energies, your flow. We're going to connect you into manifestation. We're going to work with some of the vibrations and essences of your future self so that you can stay connected to a loving world and you can truly allow mastery and success into you in whatever venue, whatever format you want. But for now, we would like to entertain questions if anyone would like to have one.
Hi, Galexis. Morris.
Hello.
I have a question relating to relationship and love relationship with this woman sitting next to me. And part of the question is related to a bigger spiritual idea of when, in the spiritual journey, when are you pushing too much and when do you need to put more effort in? So that's part of the background question.
All right.
The
foreground is.
Yeah. It's just in our relationship, we've come several times to a place where we've almost let it go and have kept going. And so it's partly to see what advice you might give or suggestions to move through and to wherever that might be.
All right. What is the scenario or the common symptom of what this significant meeting, this little wall or this glitchy place looks like? What happens? Do you have an argument?
Sometimes I think we move out of trust with each other.
And would there be a reason for that? Specifically, for example, that one of you has done something sneaky and the other one gets freaked out about it? What has anything that has indicated?
It's been different things.
Mm-hmm.
But so it's not always the same, but there's...
All right. Well, now, trust in a relationship is the foundation of the relationship. If you don't have safety, trust, that's first chakra, foundation. You can't build a relationship, that's for sure. Now, a lot of people have an idea about what trust is in a relationship. And in your consensus, a definition of trust in a love relationship is that nobody goes out and has sex with anybody else. Or, you know, nobody hides pivotal information from the other. Nobody makes a big lie and tries to pull the wool over the other one's eyes about who they are. These kinds of things are very critical in consensus reality relationships. And they can be critical in any relationship, depending on what's been agreed upon by both members. But the secret to being able to establish safety and trust in a relationship is the ability to achieve intimacy with each other in a non-judgmental atmosphere in which both parties are sincerely looking out for each other's best interest. And that the other knows this and therefore can feel safe. Do you feel, dear one, that in your relationship that you've ever touched that place?
Yes, I think we've touched it.
Mm-hmm. And did you freak out, either one of you? Did you panic, run away?
Some panic, yes.
All right, dear one. Panic is natural when you hit a deeper level of intimacy. Because if you feel that your reality is unsafe, this is the place you would expect the guillotine blade to come crashing down and off with your head, right? Secondly, if you have a feeling of insecurity about yourself, this is the challenging place where most likely if you are being revealed and the other is seeing more of you, they may not like it. And they might say, well, you need some improvement first before you qualify, right? Or they might turn their back on you. And that's a scary possibility, right? And the third one is that when you get really, really close and intimate and you are seen, you feel much more, especially even if it's a positive experience and you get deep into each other's energy field, deep into the love with each other. It becomes even scarier. Because what if now you've opened up, you've been vulnerable, you've allowed some love in, what if you lose this now? Will you be able to handle it? Now that you finally open to it, oh my gosh, I could lose this. And how painful would that be? You understand, dear one?
Yes.
All right. In order to make it through this crisis period, this point of crisis, which we will kind of term roughly the intimacy crisis, you have to be willing to interpret everything that you see in this relationship from the point of view of the light being that you are. Do not interpret it through the child's eyes, because then you're going to get judgments. Do not interpret it through the adolescent's eyes, because you're afraid to be needy. You're afraid you're going to lose something. Don't interpret it through the young adult's eyes, because if so, then you'll start looking at terrible as well as positive potential futures down the line and overload yourself. It's important when you get to this point to stay present, to breathe, in a sense, because the intensity passes. It's not forever. Intensity of intimacy will pass, even if the two of you are still right there together. Why? because it begins to integrate into you. And as soon as it's integrating it into you, it's no longer as intense. It's more intense when it's new and fresh and it's not part of you. So the longer that you can sustain that point of intimacy, the easier it's going to be to get through it to a place to where you're going to feel safer again. Now, here's what we would suggest for your relationship. As you both have a certain sense of order, protocol about what you think a good relationship should be, what it should look like, etc. These are your definitions of a relationship. You think that the other person should do this and you should do that. You have ideas of how it should unfold, what it should look like in your day-to-day life. Don't even look at the future whatsoever. Just look at here and now. And sit down with each other and discuss what you see that to be. What's your definition of a good relationship? What would that be on a daily basis? What would it be when you wake up in the morning? Look at the forms of it. For example, somebody may say, oh, we have to, you know, wake up in bed together and make love first thing in the morning. And the other one says, no, I don't want to make love first thing in the morning. It takes me a while to get my brain on. I want to get up and have my coffee first. Okay? We're just making up an example. You know, we don't say that's your example, okay? We're not going to give anyone your details, right? So it's a point of order. You see? And so what you want to say, well, my definition of good relationship is that we wake up and we immediately have sex. And the other one says, no, mine is that we come back together when we're both really ready and we can just kind of like get into the groove. When we're both like, our brains are on, everything's cooking and we don't have bad breath or anything, you know. I want to be more prepared. I want to prepare the setting too. I don't want to have the sheets so messy or something. Let's go into another room. Let's whatever. Use your imaginations to imagine what would be the perfect relationship with this other person. You see, with each other. And then you describe it. Maybe you even write it down. Sit down, compare notes. Find out where it's a hit or a miss. And negotiate. Negotiate. Well, one day we'll do this and one day we'll do that and da da da. And or make arrangements. Now, a lot of people say, oh, but that's not very loving. That's not very spontaneous. That's not exciting and romantic at all. No, it doesn't appear to be. But if both of you are in choice the whole time because of your arrangements and your negotiations, you're both empowered light beings having sex, drinking your coffee, you know. It makes the relationship safe. It makes the relationship beautiful and empowered for both of you. You see, part of the tragedy of the consensus training and that shame imprint that all of you have is that the ideas of romance are set by the time you're 12. You know, you can be a tween and still be, you know, having a total adoration for some rock star or movie star or whoever. Witness all this stuff that's going on with Bieber, right? It's like 10-year-old, 8-year-old girls out there going, over this guy. Heck, you know, you all had the same thing with the Beatles, you know. Don't laugh. You had your day acting like idiots over somebody, right? But you see, the point is that whole matrix, that whole energy of the consensus has this whole extreme idea in adolescence where you're very masculine and very feminine. And here's what the man does and here's what the woman does. And that just screws so many people up because you're never fitting that specific narrow little line. So when you negotiate something, you find a new relationship. There's you, there's the other, and then there is the relationship, which is a synergy of the two of you. Synergy is where the sum of is greater. You know, the whole is greater than the sum of the parts. So you have one person, another person, and you think, okay, I have two. No, you have at least four, at least six, eight. The energies are multiplied dynamically. So if you have power, love, freedom, and safety in your relationship, and you multiplied that dynamically, whew, what fun that is, right? Now, what comes in as the most difficult aspect in a love relationship between a man and a woman? And we're specifying man and woman, even though this takes place also in gay and lesbian relationships, but it's not as clearly defined. But with a man and a woman, there's the man feeling that he has to be somehow or another, he has to be composed and strong and dignified and aware and smart and know everything. And the woman feels like somehow or another she has to be loving enough, she has to care enough, she has to nurture him enough, she has to pay attention to his quirks, and sometimes she has to do a little ooch him to self-improve. Okay? Both of these are dangerous, because what it ends up being is that the woman wants to know, I want to know more about you, and the man says, no, you're attacking me. And the woman says, I want to come closer. And the man goes, no, get away, get away. I don't want to talk about that. Later, maybe. Or never. I might lose this argument, so I don't want to even get started. Argument? We're not arguing. I just want to know why you wanted... Blah, 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 blah. No, blah, blah, blah. And it gets stuck. Because a man is afraid that his shame is going to be seen. And the woman is afraid she's not understanding enough. And if she could just understand, then his hostility or his fears or whatever, she could take care of that. She could make adjustments. She could give. She could help. It turns into a parent-child dynamic, and then the relationship is lost. Do the two of you understand that one?
Yes. Right.
So if you want to really understand where you want to go with the relationship, because as soon as you start thinking about what's the future, then you're going to start thinking about, well, commitment or not commitment? Lifestyle, what do we want to do? Where do we want to live? What goes on there? You have to start here in the present and get that communication to where neither of you take it personally. Neither of you take it personally. We repeat, neither of you take the communication personally. Okay. It's not about what you have to change with yourself. It's not about what's wrong. It's not about having to figure everything out. It's about being present and accepting yourself, accepting the fact that you tend to buy into shame more often than you want to admit, and then you think you've got to fix yourself or fix the other one or something. It means that you have to be comfortable with your own darkness as well as your light. And you have to assume safety because your energy field, your divine flow is coming from you out. You're not cringing and fearing that you're going to get hit or have difficulties with receiving. You just sending the energy out, trusting yourself that it's going to work out one way or another to be positive for both of you, even if that should mean that you're not together. But what is best for the other, you want that. Can both of you, for each other, say, I want what is the best for you? Can you do that?
I want what's best for you.
Yes, I want what's best for you.
All right. Bring out the puppies. Yeah. And recognize that it's not about the form. It's not about what commitment is supposed to look like. It's not about a ring on a finger. It's not about all those details. But you do have to find out what each other sense of order is. Otherwise, you're going to be fighting over picky stuff. Are you going to freak out over picky stuff? Are you going to take picky stuff personally? You know, the old story about the cap on the toothpaste? How that can turn into a total marriage disaster? It's the same. That's that kind of thing. The form. The I'm right. No, I'm right. No, I'm right. No, I want it this way. No, I want it this way. Can you both give up being right? This is a hard one now. This goes to the core of the consensus crap, right? Can you give up being right? You know the alternative? The alternative is not being wrong. Okay? The alternative is being out of that loop of the right, the wrong judgment loop entirely. It's like there's positive judgments, good and bad. And there's negative judgment, right? You say each other are good, you can be positively judging each other and setting up the context of bad along with it. You have one end of the polarity, you have the other one. Right? So you want to step outside that box. So it's never about right or wrong, ever, 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 ever. Because as soon as it's right or wrong, you're going to take it personally. You're going to do your knee-jerk automatic reaction to try to fix it, whatever it is. Whether that means to shut the other one up, to run away, or to try to fix the other one, or try to talk them into something. Or whatever. You understand, dear ones?
Yes.
So when we say, are you willing to give up being right? We don't mean to say, are you going to be willing to be wrong? Well, if you happen to fall into that, admit it. But there's no shame in being wrong. There's no shame in being wrong, we repeat. Because wrong, as soon as you get it, oh, I just made a judgment. There's some old shame here. Oh, well, to heck with that. I'm going to get out of that. Let me remember who I am. See, it can be easy getting out of these sticky places if you hold your awareness there. And one of the ways that we would suggest, too, on the ongoing basis of a relationship, is never to hold an issue unresolved against the other one, past 3 days. In other words, when you have an argument or a discussion, do not bring up what the person did last week or 2 months ago. Okay? It means that you're too scared to talk about it then. And so you've been nursing in a resentment. And then it shows up again. You haven't said anything about it, so they have no clue. Now you're really resentful. And you're hostile. You're angry. You can get kind of spiteful. All right? So what you want to recognize is that if you have an issue, the two of you need to commit yourself not to some indefinite term of relationship, but commit yourself to working through whatever issue it is, to talk about it, to get it clear, to get understanding, to be aware, to be able to stay in love and out of the right-wrong matrix, or polarity, rather, within 3 days of whatever the incident is. And if you don't make it in 3 days, you just can't bring it up. You just can't bring it up. You just can't bring it up. Oh, I don't want to bring it up. We're going to have a big blowout if I bring it up. I'm just too scared to bring it up. Okay, the third day has passed. Okay. Then you have to deal with it yourself within you and clear it. So you don't hold anything past. Nothing continues. So if you have an argument in the future, it's fresh to that time, so nobody overreacts. Because if you're holding something in and somebody, you know, steps on your toe, bang, you're going to get the full force of what's been stored in your closet. It's not fair to them. It's not fair to you. And it's not a loving thing to do. And if you're afraid to discuss this type of thing, then deal with your shame. Deal with your feelings of inadequacy. Because you've got to be open. You've got to be honest. And do it while it's still fresh. Clean it up while it's still fresh. Or take the responsibility to do it all yourself. If you do that, then you don't have these periodic blow-up type of things that are common for most couples. One of the things that is so amazing to us and is that the patterns that couples have, it's the same stupid stuff. Every last couple has the same stuff. And the pattern can almost be reproduced to the word that they used in arguments. Almost down to the very word, the same phrases. It just boggles our mind. You know, well, we don't kind of have but 100 minds. But anyway, it's just amazing. That's the imprint of the consensus. And what the sad part about it is that every couple thinks they're the only ones experiencing that. They think they're alone out there. And what is this horrible thing that's happening in the relationship? I don't know how to deal with it. It just comes up out of nowhere. I don't know what it is. And I don't see anybody else doing it. Well, of course, nobody's going to do it in public. They'll feel like fools doing it in public. But frankly, everybody does it. So there's no shame, really. There's no shame about it. It's something that the consensus trained in your unconscious mind. It's in the collective unconscious. When you enter into a relationship, it kicks in a collective unconscious program. This happens in other instances too, but any place where there's a contract, like business, if you enter into a business contract, it can kick in a whole round of crap from the consensus, from the collective, and you won't know why you're acting the weird way you are. Because before you signed that contract, you didn't, but oh, now I'm responsible, and now I'm freaked out, now I'm panicked. But that's consensus stuff, you see. It's all about separation and control. And that's a tragedy that so many marriages, so many beautiful relationships are lost. They're devastated by this exact pattern. Yeah, you can read, what is it, men are from Mars and women are from Venus. That doesn't tell you what to do about it. It gives you some of the translation of the languaging that is being used. And it's a really good manual to understand some of the languaging of the collective unconscious and what it's interpreted really to mean, and how both people tend to think that their interpretation, like the woman program interpretation, is the same as a man program interpretation. No way is it. That's why that Mars-Venus book came out, to translate the male program and the female program. Doesn't tell you how it can be healed, but it certainly can give you an idea of the tremendous disparity of perception that happens when a relationship comes together and both parties try to be the man and the woman. It just kicks in the most ancient crap, and it's called the battle of the sexes. We invite all of you in this new paradigm, in the new template that we have installed in you, the matrix, in this new matrix, to bust out of this particular limiting pattern forever. You don't need to follow the collective unconscious pattern, because you have a pathway of consciousness and not unconsciousness. Because you see, dear ones, you know that underneath it all, there's this wellspring of incredible love. Yes? You can feel it. It's there. All right. So what we're going to do is what? Take a break?
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
How about that? You're certainly welcome, dear one. This is a very significant topic. And we hope that helps. All right. Just remember, never take anything personally. It's so hard not to, you're right. Absolutely. That's your training, is to fight, defend. It's unsafe. If you don't take anything personally, you'll find that your reality becomes safe. My gosh, what a concept. It starts in you. What a concept. It's you that's unsafe. And as soon as you're safe, hey, the whole reality becomes safe for you. And loving and free and empowered. It's a wondrous world. All right. How many minutes?
20.
20-minute break. And then we'll be back again for more of the grand finale. All right. Farewell for now.